Hello, this is Jeff Gadiosi, and you are on MisplacedStraws.com, where music comes to life. And I have a really special guest today. We spoke last spring as he released his Origami record, a tremendous record from his band Soto. And he's back now to talk about the amazing new record, 2020, or MMXX, he's about to release with his band Sons of Apollo. And if you haven't heard by now, Sons of Apollo are an amazing pool of talent made up of Mike Portnoy and Derek Sherinian, both formerly of Dream Theater, Ron Bumblefoot Thal, formerly of Guns N' Roses, bass god Billy Sheehan, and my guest today, just one of the great voices in rock, Mr. Jeff Scott Soto. Welcome back, Jeff.
Thanks, Jeff. Good to be back. It's so fun. I'm so glad you didn't introduce us as a super group, because I was going to have to put a pie in your face.
that's like one of the words I just refuse to use. You know,
so. Well, you know, and it's funny because every time they say, how does it feel to be in a super group? I go, well, I haven't gotten my cape yet. You know,
yeah.
I don't have a big S for my chest plate thing sent, so I don't feel like we're a super group.
And, you know, I mean, we're going to dig deep into this record because it's really amazing. But I'd like to start off with a song that just really grabbed me. And, you know, we were talking a little earlier about, like, you know, remembering interviews and things like that. But when I was fortunate enough to say hello to you in person, I was backstage at the first ever Soto show at Middle East in Boston. And it came about because my wife and I were really good friends with your former bass player, you know, the late, great David Z, and Dave knew what a big fan I am of yours. The new single and video, Desolate July, just moved me to tears. Dave had connections with everybody in Sons of Apollo. But talk a little bit about that song and video, which are just an amazing tributes to a great man.
Well, yeah, and David and Mike actually had the longer of all of us relationship. Mm-hmm. They've known each other for many, many years. And even touring with Winery Dogs back in 2016 is more or less when Portnoy and I connected the most, because I've known him through the years of more mm-hmm. meeting him and hanging out after one of the Dream Theater shows or something like that. We never really knew each other. We never worked with each other until that point, until Soto was opening for Winery Dogs. But clearly David and Mike had a long-standing relationship. And so that kind of broke the ice and made it really easy to tour with those guys. Because I had the long-standing relationship with Billy and with Richie. And, you know, it was such a great run. And that's actually the antithesis to me being the singer for Sons of Apollo. That's where Mike realized that that's the singer he wanted to work with for this new thing that was coming up. So I wanted to do something special for David. As soon as Derek played me that haunting piano piece, it was really eerie and haunting. I knew exactly where the lyric was taking me on it. And I'm so glad the guys were all on board and allowed me, especially Mike, we both felt strongly that we wanted to do something for David. We did something on the Origami record for David.
Right.
In the sense of they immortalized him with a track that he co-wrote with us on tour, and we used the original bass tracks and built the entire song around that. Like, you and I spoke about that. But I wanted to do a little something more than just a tribute to him in immortalizing him. I wanted to actually write a song about how, especially both Mike and I felt, when this time of year comes around in July, when we lost him, we feel empty and desolate inside, and that's hence the title. I wrote the entire lyric around how I feel personally and every time I have to see a tribute or that just that feeling of that day we got the news that we lost him. It's I just wanted to put that in a piece of music that the rest of the world can relate to, because everybody can relate to losing somebody. And in different ways and different factors, that song can resonate to a lot of people, and that's what I wanted to put out there and put across.
Yeah, I mean, and it's beautiful. And for those of us that knew him, it sums up what we all feel. So I thank you for that. And yeah, as much as I loved Psychotic Symphony, the first record, I think this one surpasses it by a mile. And you guys did a major tour for that first record. I caught your New York City show. Do you feel that all that time on stage really brought you together more as a band rather than individual musicians?
Oh, God, yes. I mean, what made it easy to step into this band was the fact that we already had personal relationships with one another. Some had already worked with each other, but for the most part, I knew all the guys in this band. Bubblefoot was the one I knew the least, but he's the kind of person, he was like David was. You only have to know him for a few months, and you feel like you've known him a lifetime. So we already had that connection as people. And so stepping into this, I wasn't a stranger. I wasn't like, what the hell am I doing here? Why did they choose me? It felt natural in the sense of us knowing each other and being friends already. But the chemistry of a band, that can only be built by touring and spending that kind of time with each other. And we absolutely got that connection and that chemistry, which I think loaned itself to a massive change and transformation in how we work together. And I totally agree with you. And I feel that the album, direction-wise, doesn't really go that far away from Psychotic Symphony. But chemistry-wise, you can absolutely 1,000% feel that the chemistry is a lot more there. To be honest with you, I personally like I was able to put more personality, more of me into this new record. I feel just my performances, it's a little bouncier. I'm trying to find the right word to use to describe how I feel my performances are. I think on the first album, I was a little more homogenized. It was kind of a little more of my quirky little hits and bits and bobs were kind of removed and left off. And I felt a little more at ease with this one, that I could put more of my own personality into the melodies and into the actual songwriting.
Well, and that's exactly where I was going to go, because I think there's a definite thematic shift in your lyrics and melodies. You know, the first record was a little bit more of like the mythological, you know, where you would think a prog rock song would go. Whereas this one now, it's a little more you. It's a little more in the here and now. Is that an intentional thing?
Well, you know what? We don't really think too hard about exactly what we're doing. At this point of our careers and everything we've all done and already done, this band is about something that excites us, something that makes us all look at each other and go, man, that's badass. Without really concentrating too hard on, when, you know, forget about radio, forget about MTV, all those factors that were such an important ideal for bands and record companies and all that. We really just want to excite ourselves at this point. And this band has to have a brand of music that excites us. Forget about the comparison. Forget about this sounds like it could be that. That's a piece of that. We ignore all of that because we're only about what makes this band tick. And if we really love it, in the end, we're hoping that people will love it just the same, but it means more to us than it excites us.
And as you guys are putting it together, I know, like I said, you usually handle the lyrics where, you know, Mike, Darren, and Derek and Bumblefoot take the music. Are the five of you all together as the songs come together in the studio, or do you kind of work separately and then get together after?
Well, the process of the writing, it's the same as the first album. The majority of the material on the first album was exactly as the entire recording, the entire creation of the music on this one. That was Ron and Derek and Mike getting together and hashing out ideas and piecing the puzzle together. I have no real place in the music part of the musical side of Sons of Apollo. Those guys are masters of their trade. I have no place in saying, hey, do this chord here instead, or repeat that part, or change this line or lyric. I would feel silly stepping in there and telling these ridiculous musicians, you know, to what they should be doing. As a producer, I have that natural inkling and that natural reaction to things, but as a writer, not so much.
Right.
They have the same respect when it comes to what I do. And yeah, I can write something and I can put it together and send it to the guys, and they will have their opinions, because in the end, the song is more important than the ego of who wrote what and how it was done. It's all about the song, and we all respect that. We all respect one another for that. So when it comes to me putting down melodies and lyrics. I'm not saying just because this is my forte and this is what I've been doing all my life, it has to be this. I'm very open, especially in the sense of branding the Sons of Apollo sound, that we all kind of put our heads together and we make sure that everybody's happy with it, because we all got to live with it. In the end, that's a piece of music that's going to be a part of our signature for life.
Right.
So I want everybody to be as happy with it as I am. It's not all about, well, I think it's great, so screw you guys, it's going to stay that down.
Yeah, and one thing I always find unique about this band is, you know, your 2019 live record, which I highly recommend to anybody listening to this, was recorded in Bulgaria. You're about to kick off a world tour that'll take you to places like the Czech Republic and Slovakia and Ukraine. First of all, what's the response to a band like Sons of Apollo in those Eastern Bloc countries? And did you guys individually have followings there, or is it this band that really translates in those places?
Well, for starters, I'm married to a Bulgarian woman, so I go to Bulgaria every year. It's part of my summer. It's part of my break, so to speak. So I have a lot of family. I have a lot of friends there now. So that show was very nerve-wracking for me, too, because it was kind of like playing an L.A. show, and to say that we're filming in this ancient Roman amphitheater, that the setting, as soon as you walk on that stage, you get goosebumps, because this thing was built before Christ. It's one of the oldest living structures.
It'd be amazing.
And so it's a crazy vibe that you get from that. And then you add that we're using a symphony orchestra. And then you add the fact that we're doing songs that we only had one day to rehearse together with them or as a band. There were so many factors that made me just go, oh, my God, I'm going to be a ball of nerves that day. And to be honest with you, it was such a blur from beginning to end. I equate it to like a wedding reception. Mm-hmm. Anybody who's ever gotten married, you realize how overwhelming everything is. You have all your friends and all your family in this big gathering, and then by the end of the day, you just realize how exhausted you are because of everything you had to do during the course of that day.
Right.
That's exactly how I felt when I got off the stage. It was an extended, extra long set, and I literally went backstage and I collapsed on the ground for about 10 minutes. Because I was just so overwhelmed with emotions and how well that came out. But adding to what you said, yeah, we have our collective fans all over the world. And that's never an automatic for a band like this. Most people think, oh, these guys, they're doing this because they want the instant success. Absolutely not. The song Goodbye Divinity is exactly about that. It's about the expectation, the divine expectation of putting all these people together and everybody expecting this to be huge out of the gate. And we're not the biggest. We're not as big as some of the biggest bands in the world just because of who we are. But we can accumulate our individual and collective audiences. But for the most part, this is a brand new band and we have to go out there and fight for exactly what we have now. It's not a given. It's not an automatic. And so, yeah, those Eastern Bloc countries, they get it. They love, especially Prague music, they love music that takes them somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just your typical 3.5 minute song that's, verse, pre-chorus, chorus, and guitar solo. They totally appreciate and understand the higher levels of musicality out there. So absolutely, I think they get it in a big way.
And kind of along those lines of playing live in that first tour, I mean, you guys pulled out all the stops. I mean, you mentioned the orchestra. In addition to the Psychotic Symphony tracks, you guys did a lot of covers that related to your shared histories and things like that. What are you looking at as you're about to get ready for the current tour? I mean, do you feel like you have to top that? Do you feel that now that Sons has a lot more material, you can concentrate more just on this band? Or, you know, how are you guys approaching the upcoming tour?
Well, yeah, especially because we only have two records, now we can absolutely draw from just our material to make the show. Whereas the first tour, it being a headlining tour pretty much throughout the entire year that we were on the road, we had to add some things to make it a full-length show because even if you play the entire record, you only have an hour show.
Mm-hmm.
Now we have two albums that are about an hour each, so we have a two-hour show. We don't even have to do everything off the first album. That being said, the focus is absolutely 1,000% on Sons of Apollo now, and not having to, I don't want to say filler, but filling the voids with other aspects. And that was a lot, to me, that was a lot of fun. At first I wasn't really too keen on doing two Dream Theater songs that I never heard, and I had to learn, and I had to kind of, because Dream Theater fans, like Rush fans, like any prog bands, the audience has really stuck with that band. If you don't do it right, man, you're going to get slammed.
Exactly.
You're just going to get thrown into the ocean with a cement block. And so I didn't want the comparisons, or I didn't want the, oh, well, so-and-so sings it better. I enjoyed this version better than, I didn't want those comparisons because I don't necessarily need them in my life right now. I've already been through singing for a band that I had to replace a legendary singer. I didn't want to have to do it again. But when we started doing them, they kind of turned into Sons of Apollo songs, to be quite honest.
Mm-hmm.
The way we did them felt so natural and so easy. I look forward every night to doing those two Dream Theater songs. And then, of course, we came back and did the Van Halen cover, which that to me was just like, okay, now we can relax. Now we can let down our hair and we can have a little bit of a party. And that's why we did that, because that's one thing we can all agree on in this band, is that we're all this massive Van Halen fans. But finding a song that had keyboards in it that would make sense to do, Cradle was the best thing for us to do.
And what on the new record are you most looking forward to playing live?
Absolutely, by far, New World Today. The last song on the record, 16-minute extravaganza.
Yeah,
Every time I listen to that thing, I'm sure Mike and Derek are sick of it by now. Every time I hear that song, I send them a text saying, I can't believe I'm a part of something this incredible. This to me is like one of the highlights of my life and my career, is that song.
Yeah.
Because I love the ebbs and flows, and Bumblefoot is just an absolute star on this song. Everything about this song just makes me just gleam. And so that's the one I'm really looking forward to, not only performing live, but listening to back, you know, watching the guys pull it off live every night. I'm so excited about this one.
Yeah, and on a little different note, you had mentioned Rush a little earlier. Last week we lost the amazing Neil Peart. I know Mike had a strong relationship with Neil. Do you have any thoughts or memories of Neil and Rush?
Yeah, I mean, my brother who passed away the same year as Dave Z, he's the one that got me into Rush. He was a drummer, and just watching my brother trying to learn Neil's parts and actually pulling it off, he was a really good drummer, not nearly the level of Mike or Neil, but he was right behind them in the sense that he could, if he couldn't play it, he could fake it. And that was one of the draws to Rush material, is seeing how excited my brother was of this drummer. And in the beginning, because Rush, for the most part, because of the vocals, is an acquired taste. Of course, musically, it's just beyond the moon. But if you can't get past Geddy Lee's voice, you're not even going to be able to listen to the band. And that, in the beginning, was a tough one for me, because I like singers like Freddie Mercury and Lou Graham, you know, the soulful Steve Perry, those kind of guys. Obviously, Geddy Lee didn't fall in that category of a singer. But once I got past that, because the musicality and the drumming was just so intense, I absolutely, positively loved Geddy Lee's voice, and became such a massive Rush fan, as my brother did. So that's my only connection to them, is that and Mike Portnoy. I never got to meet any of the guys. I never toured with them. I never got to that part. The closest to any Canadian band of that level was Triumph, when I was still with Yngwie, and we got to do an entire tour.
Another great band.
Yeah, absolutely. But I don't have any ties in with Rush, and I couldn't be a bigger fan than somebody like Portnoy at this point, because they were such a huge influence on everyone. I don't care who you are.
And also, this will air. I'll have this online in a couple of days, but the day we're talking, they had just announced the 2020 class of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I don't know if you've heard it yet, or if you have any thoughts on the hall or who's going in.
I have not. I've been too busy with other things to pay attention to the finer details, unfortunately.
you know, unfortunately, no Judas Priest or Motorhead this year. It's Doobie Brothers, Depeche Mode, Nine Inch Nails, T-Rex, Whitney Houston, and the Notorious B.I.G. for what it's worth.
Okay.
But,
Yeah,
well,
I don't know what to say about that.
Yeah, exactly. It seems to be the overriding theme today. But again, the new record, 2020 or MMXX, guys pronounce it.
Yeah, well, we can go either way. Everybody's asking, what is it? Is it MMXX? Yeah. Is it 2020? And the answer is yes.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, clearly, we're kind of following up on the tip of Sons of Apollo being a Roman kind of influence with the artwork, with the whole vibe. And so using the Roman numerals to say 2020, that's the only real correlation to calling it MMXX.
Yeah.
For the most part, it's 2020 because that's the year we're in. That's the next decade. We're kind of the lead-off album of the next decade, and that's why Mike wanted to call the album 2020.
Well, it's out everywhere January 17th. You guys have a ton of physical product on your website, all kinds of special editions and vinyl, as well as it'll be on all the streaming services. The tour kicks off the following week. I'm hoping to make the Boston show, so hopefully we get a chance to say hello again. And just thank you. Best of luck. It is a great album. I highly recommend it to anyone who is a fan, not just of your individual band, but of just great melodic prog rock and roll. I mean, it's a great record. So best of luck with it.
I appreciate that so much.
And hopefully we can catch up and say hello again in Boston.
Sounds good, Jeff. I look forward to it.
Thanks a lot, Jeff.
All right.
Bye.
Bye-bye.